Would you turn to Isaiah chapter 2? Isaiah chapter 2, and I'll read from verse 5. O house of Jacob, come and let us walk in the light of the Lord. For you have forsaken your people, the house of Jacob, because they are filled with eastern ways. They are soothsayers like the Philistines, and they are pleased with the children of foreigners. The land is also full of silver and gold, and there is no end to their treasures. The land is also full of horses, and there is no end to their chariots. The land is also full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. People bow down, and each man humbles himself. Therefore do not forgive them. Enter into the rock, and hide in the dust from the terror of the Lord, and the glory of his majesty. The lofty looks of man shall be humbled. The haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. Now verse 5 begins with an invitation, but then the tone changes almost straight away. So verse 5, O house of Jacob, a name for the people of God, the children of Israel, O Israelites, come and let us walk in the light of the Lord. That's addressed to the people of God. But verse 6 is addressed to God himself. So there are two invitations here. One to the people and one to God. And the one to God is rather longer. We'll come back to verse 5. You have forsaken your people, the house of Jacob. And then he goes on to tell us why. Now those first two verses appear to contradict. The house of Jacob has been forsaken by God, yet verse 5 says, O house of Jacob, come and let us walk in the light of the Lord. Let us walk with God. And evidently Isaiah beholds that the house of Jacob is not walking with God. But it's not because God has stopped walking with them, but rather they have stopped walking with God. And then we look at the reasons for it. They are filled with eastern ways. Well, the East has always been rather exotic, hasn't it? The Orient. And yet this is no compliment. The eastern ways here almost certainly refer to the eastern peoples whose religious ideas and doctrines they have so freely imbibed. In fact, they're even like the Philistines. Now, the Philistines, of course, really originate from Greece rather than Philistia. So they're influenced by people from the east, and they're influenced by people from the west. A soothsayer, those who think that magic spells and words can affect nature and the outcomes. They're essentially as pagan as the pagan peoples among whom they live. They are pleased with the children of foreigners, and one might think, well, what's wrong with that? But presumably it is as, children to marry their own children. They're making alliances with these pagan peoples. They're reflecting their religious ideas, and they're looking for partners for their children among the Philistines, among the Easterlings. It does not matter how pagan or heathen you are deemed an appropriate spouse for an Israelite girl or boy. In verse 7, we read of their wealth. Now, I have to make it clear, I do not believe this passage is referring to Great Britain. God has never had a covenant with Great Britain. And yet there are very obvious parallels, I think, between the house of Jacob at the time of Isaiah and our own nation. Their land is full of silver and gold. Those two most precious metals, the land is full of them. They've never been wealthier. They are materially well off. There is no end to their treasures. Whatever they want, they can afford. Whatever luxury they put their eyes upon, that they may obtain. And that wealth also makes them powerful. They are now a people of horse and chariot. I once did a Bible study on the chariot in the Bible. And references to it are nearly always negative. Not always. Some, of course, are neutral. But often the chariot, being that kind of wonderful modern weapon, as they will have considered it to be, is really a picture of man's strength. We can defend ourselves. We can prevent anyone from attacking us. Whereas God's people, the house of Jacob, should have trusted in God alone. Nothing intrinsically evil about a chariot. I think Solomon had one or two. But they are things we are inclined to trust in rather than the Lord our God. And here is a people which have many of them. And verse 8 tells us the root of it. The land is not only full of silver and gold, horses and chariots, but full of idols. And what is an idol? It is a work of their own hands. A god which we manufacture ourselves. We don't want a god that will tell us how to live, so we'll make up our own. We'll give him a name of our own. We'll give him a character, a face of our own. That way we can control God. Whereas, of course, the one true God of heaven cannot be depicted. His beauty, his magnificence is beyond any skill of a human artist to depict. But humans worship that which they make, instead of acknowledging the one who made them. That is the crime of idolatry. It's not just a waste of time, a waste of wood, but it is a robbery of the one true God, that we would offer devotion and love to something worthless instead of to him who is so absolutely worthy. Their own fingers have made them. It says, people bow down and each man humbles himself. And one might say, well, humility is a good thing. What's wrong with that? But he's humbling himself before the idol. There is the statue of Dagon or Baal or Asherah, whichever one Isaiah has in mind, all of them. And before the statue, the people are bowing down and humbling themselves, prostrating themselves before this horrible image. And that is not a humility that God desires. Indeed, creation of an idol is actually an act of pride. To create an idol and then to humble yourself before it is not the humility that God is desiring. And then Isaiah says, therefore do not forgive them. Does that take you by surprise? Would you not expect Isaiah to say, therefore Lord, please forgive them? He says, therefore do not forgive them. Here is a people who do not want to be forgiven. Here is a people who enjoy crafting an idol with their fingers and then bowing down to the same. Verse 10 alters the gear again. Enter into the rock and hide in the dust from the terror of the Lord and the glory of his majesty. You know, the Lord, the one that you were not worshipping, the God of heaven, whom you ignored. You were busy bowing and prostrating before the idol. But the glory of the majesty of the Lord is coming upon you. And on that day, The brightness and glory of his coming will be such that you will want the earth to swallow you up, O you who will not repent. You would hide in the dust of death rather than be exposed by the brilliance and the awesomeness of our God. And in that day, the lofty looks of man shall be humbled. Of course, they are humbling themselves in verse 9, but that is not the humility of which God desires in us, but rather they will be humbled when the day of the Lord comes. Those who are haughty, they shall be made to bow down. And the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. So the main section of the passage is Isaiah saying what the people have done wrong and why they are not entitled to any forgiveness on God's part at all. Verses 10 and 11 is what will happen to them in that great and terrible day of judgment. And yet, all of that was preceded by verse 5. O house of Jacob, come and let us walk in the light of the Lord. In other words, there is a wonderful invitation. Come all ye who are weary. Return to me. Walk in my light, not in your own darkness. Come to me. Therefore, the bits that follow are surely addressed to those who will not walk in the light of the Lord, who do not want truth, who would prefer darkness because their deeds are evil. Well, what can we get from the passage in closing? Number one. Human sin is deeply offensive to God. Number two. God will not let evil run its course forever. It will come to a halt. Number three, in the meantime, there is that wonderful offer in verse 5. Come. Come and let us walk. Come and let us walk in the light. And they who would walk with the Lord in his light will not be described by verses 6 to 9, and neither will they be afraid of verses 10 and 11. Therefore be encouraged. Mm-hmm.